Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, and I am your host, Carl Fiadini. We are podcasting on site at Cahaba Club Herbal Outpost here with Marvin. Oh my God, my boy. If you haven't heard of Cahaba Club, you got to look into it. Check them out at CahabaClub.com. Today we explore how food connects us all. We're diving into a complex and often polarizing issue that has far-reaching impacts on not just the restaurant industry, but on society as a whole. We're talking about immigration. In recent years, immigration policies have been at the forefront of political conversations and media coverage. From border walls to visa rules, there are countless factors that shape who can come to this country and how long they can stay. In the restaurant world, immigration is a particularly salient issue. The food service industry is an integral part of the American culture, and you know what? So many of our favorite dishes and beloved chefs have roots in other parts of the world. At the same time, many restaurant workers are immigrants, and their contributions to the industry cannot be overstated. Okay, so how do we reconcile the importance of immigration with the realities of policy? Well, you know what? Today, we're going to talk about that. Let's dig in. But first, attention chefs and food buyers. Are you looking to improve your proteins program with quality and service by the best in the beef business? Reach out to Peninsula Food Service. With 25 butchers on staff, their services will dazzle you and impress your dining guests. Peninsula is the largest Creekstone farm distributor in the Southeast United States. And let the gang at Peninsula Food Service cut your beef burdens away. Ask about their dry age program. Look them up at peninsulafood.com. Hell yeah. Our guest today is Chef Thomas Parker from the Carroll Hotel. My boy, Chef is we call Chef a culinary partner to the show, and that just means we create a lot of content together. Before we bring him on, let's get our resident chef, Jeffrey Schlissel, the Schlissel Meister, in the house. How you doing, baby?
Fantabulous, man.
Yeah, and beautiful day, right?
Oh my God, the last couple of days here in Florida is like strange because it's May now, and it's not
been
humid.
50 in like upper 50s in the morning. I mean, I know you guys don't get up that early, but it's been in the 50s in the morning.
We're just going to bed, right?
Yeah. You guys are just like laying down. It's 5:30. My head hit the pillow. I get it. So we're on the farm. It's gorgeous. It's so quiet. I wish all the wives out there could understand the wonderful feeling that it is to just be on a farm and to be absolute silence.
Yeah. And hearing nature.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nature. Quiet, beautiful nature. All right. Let's, but wait a minute before we, all right. So you,
I bought some Scooby snacks.
Bruh. Okay. Bruh. Like, yeah. What did you bring? It's like yummy.
Yeah. I figured like last night I was like, you know what? We're going to Marvin. If I don't bring food, I am going to hear about this for like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm plus, when we're at the Carlisle Hotel last week, I was telling Chef over here to my left about how the different sauces, and I was waiting for the samples. Well, the samples came in. So I wanted to kind of bring the samples, and I had to bring something to taste with the samples. Pork belly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never mad about that.
No. So we did, I brought the, Jim over at the sauce place that we're doing and co-packing with, it just did a fantastic job on the first run. A little bit minor tweaking. It was amazing. Funny story, when we were doing the ahi tasting, the ahi verde, I tasted it, and I didn't have my wife at home, so I had nobody else to gauge to, because my daughter is one of those individuals that has a mutation for cilantro that once you taste it, it tastes like soap. So she won't taste it.
That's terrible.
So I taste it, and I'm like, wow, that's not ahi verde, and I had to wait a day. My wife comes home. I say, hey, can you taste this? She's like, oh my God, it's your ahi verde. And I'm thinking to myself, do I have a problem with my taste buds?
I mean, there was an easy fix to this.
Well, yeah.
You could just give me a call. I would have been right over to, I mean, what the hell are we talking about? Dude, like.
Next time I know.
God.
But she then finally, after the third, fourth, or fifth time.
By the way, I can eat cilantro like a son of a gun. Okay.
Keep that in mind.
It tastes
for my daughter.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll be the taster for my daughter.
Okay.
So, you know, by the fifth time she said it's your sauce, she goes, but it's salty. And I'm like, oh, thank God. So that, you know, that's a little bit of a reduction. But the ahi, the old fashioned barbecue sauce, that's got a little tweaking. But with that pork belly, with the crunch.
I think it had a lot of depth. I thought it was fantastic. Thanks. In fact, I want to hear what Chef Thomas has to say about it. Let's welcome Chef to the show. How are you doing, my brother?
Oh, I'm fantastic.
I know you are.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
I know. Hey, man. You know what? Well, this is what we do now. You're on the team. Like
you're part of the family now.
You're part of the fam.
Yeah, like right? Big time.
So, listen. Wifey's going to have to understand that you're going to become kind of a big deal. Okay, and you know, social media and the whole thing.
He already is.
I'll make her listen to this.
Bigger, eclipsing that.
You know what we need to do is get that shield from Veronica and give it to him. The Captain America shield.
Oh, yeah. We keep talking about that.
You know what? Screw it. I'm just going to order one. Just
seriously. Just drop ship it, man.
Like, next restaurant recipes, forget the chef gear.
You know what you can do? You plate right on the shield.
Now we're talking. And you know, and think of all the kids you're going to make happy after.
Oh.
Right? Imagine actually,
kid menu is going to have to expand.
Wait a minute, right? Though, for a kid menu though. Imagine having like the shield for one of the dishes or whatever for kids menu.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Have you ever heard of Turkey and the Wolf in New Orleans?
No.
That dude is crushing it. He just got a beard. It's a sandwich shop in New Orleans, and he has this fantastic like vegetarian Reuben. Why I'm saying this is every plate that he serves his food on is Melamine comic book.
Oh, that's cool.
So, I mean, every like Star Wars, there's Superman, Batman, Robin, every plate is served just like that. So imagine if you did something like that for the kids and they had their own plates.
That would be cool. I think we should send John over there. No, he would dig that.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a comic book guy like me.
Yeah, I'm saying like that would be cool. I mean, I want to go.
Yeah. Well, we're going. Well, I'm going July 13th to the 20th. Well, yours should be going because you're part of the podcast and they want to do the podcast in New Orleans.
Yeah, for sure.
Hopefully.
We'll figure it. When is this?
July. Well, it starts I got to go in on that Thursday. It starts that Saturday. Everyone pretty much flying in and then it's over on that Wednesday. So it's July like 16th to July 20th.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah.
We got to talk about that. So what's new for you? Gosh. What's going on?
Well, we just revamped all the menus in the hotel, actually. 2 months ago, we added some hot items to our rooftop bar menu. You know, that was the big thing. We've heard over the last 6 months is, you know, because I have no kitchen up there, I have no way to cook things. So you got to get creative. So incorporating a sous vide, incorporating, you know, ways to heat things without having a hood system up there. So we added a focaccia flatbread and a bao bun, short little Asian, Spanish fusion, short rib ropa vieja bao bun.
Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds delish.
Oh,
are we going to be, is that something?
Why didn't we taste that the other day?
Well, we did a lot of stuff.
You did 8 items.
8 hours of filming.
Yeah, we were late for 8 hours, man. We actually have to go back because there were things that there were items we missed. So we have to go back.
Oh, shucks. That sucks.
I know.
For no one.
I know.
No one
except
at all.
You.
No.
I think your staff loved us being in there, too.
Oh, they did.
Except for there was one guy. I think there was one person that was, I'm not going to name, or I don't even know who it was, but I'm pretty sure there was one.
That guy.
There was one guy that was like, who are these clowns? Why are they here? You know?
Well.
But with that said, people are haters.
Yeah, you know absolutely.
What I'm saying? Like,
look at food reviews.
Oh, my God. Right?
That's a whole nother subject, but we should do that on Yelp.
Oh,
yeah. Everyone's a food critic now. That's a great conversation.
Give somebody a phone, right, where you can post something and take a picture, and that's it, right?
I mean, and make sure you over-filter the shot. As I look over at John, and he gives me the stink eye.
Yeah, well, John took a picture of, took a nice candid shot, right, of me. He sends it to me. And he's like, I don't want to see you put any filters on this. So I immediately threw it into like the highest contrast possible, and I sent it back. And I was like, so. But yeah, that's what we do. All right. So real quick, I don't want to glaze by it. So Chef Thomas Parker, Carroll Hotel, we have your first season of Restaurant Recipes that we started filming. And, you know, and that includes the Dirty Dash cocktail hour for the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to start rolling videos out, like, probably within the next week or so.
That's awesome.
And the owner of the hotel was there, too, right?
Yeah.
During that whole period. That's fun.
Yeah. Explaining to him the following day was more fun.
Oh.
Everything was cool, right?
No, everything was great. Yeah. No, he actually he loved it. He told me I should be the marketer for the hotel.
Well, do wear that hat occasionally. Well, the food is the market,
right? Exactly.
So,
well, as it turns out, you're going to be a face for the hotel. I mean, that's the truth. Yeah. And we're gonna pump it. I know your awesome sales team, marketing team. They're gonna push, pump, whatever, and that's gonna be really cool. And I'm excited about it too. And I know you are, so it makes me even more elevated. So it's good stuff. All right, let's jump into the topic. I'm going to let Jeff start. You know, I let Jeff get into this first, right? Because he sets the tone, and then I have to come in and clean it all up.
There we go. Yeah. I was waiting for that.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, it's the truth. So what's up? What are you thinking?
You know, it's like what we talked about in the phone last night about this conversation. You know, doing research. I was blown away. I got this from one of the websites called MPI, and it basically is the migrationpolicyinstitute.org. And it was about the essential role of immigrants play in the U.S. U.S. food supply chain.
Right.
And with that being said, like, immigrants, they represent 22% across the board of all the different food supply chain for the United States. I mean, one of the biggest things that was like stood out for me was the states. 69% of the agriculture in California is immigrant. 70% of all of the Alaskan seafood processing plants are immigrant. 66% of Nebraska beef processing workers are immigrants. And you said it too. It's like you can see like the backbreaking work of vegetables and fruits and have to be handpicked.
Well, yeah, and how I understand it too, because here in Florida they. There was a bill passed that's going to
just
like last past week.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's
Katie's here, by the way.
What's up, baby? So we are filming on site. It's live on site. It's a farm, and Katie is the
she's the farm dog,
little farm dog, little Butte.
There she is.
So you know, and ultimately what ends up happening is the agriculture component should remain untouched because there's already, you know, the different visas that are in place for ag. Yeah,
the H1 or H2A, H2B, a J1, those are all the ones that we studied over last night. Some are like specific to agriculture, some are specific to non-agriculture.
Right. And so, you know, ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of good with it. I feel good about it, to tell you the truth.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
You know, I do too. As long as they're doing the steps that's legal to be into the country and that they can show and work in the fields. Because quite honestly, I mean, how long did you go when we first met before you got a sous chef? You went like,
oh God,
8 months, 9 months or something like that?
No,
something crazy.
It was about 6 months. I had two sous chefs when I started, but they were glorified line cooks, man. The skill level just was not there. I turned 95% of my staff over when I started. But it's hard. Like, it's hard finding good help.
Yeah.
Well, and just to clarify something too. So it's hard to find good help. So post coming out of COVID, we're kind of in a different place. You're getting people applying, but the people that are applying are not skilled in the positions that you need. Right. So it's a big problem. And when it comes down to immigration, whether it be legal or illegal immigration, however you want to look at it, you know, it's not the individual. So really, it's the companies that are, you know, have 25 or more employees, and a lot of those times, the folks that do end up coming in and getting those jobs, it's not like they're getting taken care of well. Mm-hmm. They get abused.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they work like animals, and that is the equally the main issue with me. Like, you're treating these folks unfairly, these people unfairly, and then they also came here in a way that's, I think, isn't fair when you compare other countries that have to come here through, you know, fill out the paperwork, wait, you know, go and do, you know, go through the whole process to get it done. And I've known a lot of those people over the years. So I mean, I look at it from a, you know, and being, you know, we're from South Florida too. So we're very dialed in.
I mean, I grew up during the Cuban Memorial boat lift. Sure. I grew up during Jean-Baptiste when he was ousted in Haiti. And he's still huge problems in Haiti today.
Yeah.
You know, the Dominican Republic, they had problems. Mexico now with the drug cartel, the influx.
Sure.
So, you and I definitely have lived that, being in Miami and the East Coast and stuff like that.
Side note, my wife came in on the Mariel boat lift. She was 1 year old. One year old, I should say.
See that?
Yeah.
Something to say.
It is. It's something to say.
But if you look at, like, the concern, one of the things I was reading was the National Restaurant Association, even though I really don't like them, I have to quote them because they have the information, because of the ServSafe. They have approximately 2.2 million restaurant workers in the United States are foreign-born. Out of all the restaurants that are in the United States, 38% of them are immigrant owners. Okay. Not only that, but the United States, the restaurant industry grosses $997 billion. I think we're like the largest gross national product that helps the United States as far as our industry as a whole.
Sure.
And one of the most incredible facts that I saw was from another website I was looking at. It was like the five different things about the restaurant industry, what's going on, what we should look for, what's coming up and going, is that here goes play right now. There's 600,000 jobs open right now in the industry.
Yeah.
Yet the workers that left during the pandemic and how they were treated, they feel, why should I go back anyways? Because I was treated like poop.
Okay. Well, I have a major
beef. You and I talked about this.
I have a beef with these cats. And it isn't because they were getting treated unfairly before and, you know, we should all you know, have, you know, be somebody's slave. You shouldn't know. Like the business is rough, and but it's a hard business no matter how you want to cut it. But everything changed. Everything did change. Wages went up. Benefits became available that were never there before. And it's a starting point. And regardless of how we got there, it's there. So at this point, my opinion is if you're, you know.
Remember about opinions.
Well, and I have mine. I definitely have mine. So, you know, with that said, if you, you know, if you walked away and, you know, you were disgruntled and then you, you know, you kind of didn't do anything else for the last year or so and whatever. I mean, listen, I've had a hire during that period. And I had people that were just using me so they can fill out the paperwork, so they can just get the cash, whatever they got to get.
Same thing happened to me when we opened our restaurant.
Their weekly stipend.
Yep.
And you know what? I have zero respect for that individual. Okay. Now, if you, you know, obviously principals are principals and I respect principals, right? But if you're a principled individual, you're going to look at the situation now, the landscape, and go, you know what? It's different. Can you still try to negotiate for more or something better? Yeah, but it's a completely different landscape now, and I think that it should be embraced. I think that it should be embraced, and I don't think that's happening anymore. You know, now mm-hmm. it's like the part of the workforce disappeared. It's that it doesn't show up anymore on the stats,
right?
Because they're not looking for work. They removed themselves from the actual workforce. So it the numbers are a little bit skewed. And, you know, the fact that 10%, this is based from the NRA, National Restaurant Association, they said, what, 10% of all restaurant employees are undocumented.
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That blows my mind.
I guarantee you the guy next to me, the chef next to me, they probably have to do one of those calls, right, to find out if they have legit IN.
Well, they're probably
I-9s
after,
and all that.
Oh, yeah.
After now,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because he works for a major corporate company.
I mean, yeah. We have Marriott and our managing properties standards that we have to follow. Our hiring packet is, God, I think 16 pages long of paperwork that they have to fill out.
Yeah. It's a lot. I remember during maybe, was it 2021? Like, right as we were, you know, kind of seeing some daylight. On Walk and Talk social media, I mean, dozens a day from folks from all over the world in places that they were Mr. Carl, please get me there. I'll work 100 hours a week. Just, I don't care. I don't have anything here and I have to feed my family. And I'm like, and there was 0% I could do, like nothing. And I reached out to a few different, I would never name them now, but I did reach out to some, you know, hotel channels that I'm friendly with. And I was like, well, what do we do? Like you have, look at this, look at the resources that are available for people who want to work. Well, that's, how do we bring them in? What do we do?
Well, during that time period, what was the biggest thing that was different? Because a lot of times when I was in Palm Beach, a lot of my members worked for clubs and hotels that relied specifically on foreign help through that H1, S1, J1, all those different visas to get them over to help. Once COVID hit, that whole revenue or employee stream dried up, so they had nothing. Yeah. You know, one of the things I was reading that was very interesting this morning on, I don't know if you watch Fair Kitchens or even the Eddie Lee Project.
Oh, yeah.
They said that this was an amazing statistic. 72% of restaurant workers that were pulled feel that if they have a great communication with their bosses, that they feel that would be beneficial more so than wages. And I thought that was quite ironic. The communication from upper management, that they felt like part of the team. They have an in. So that's something to think about when, if you're looking at and you're that leader, that you need to change. Like we talked about it last night. How do we connect as, you know, me being the Gen X? How do I connect with a Gen Z or a millennial like this guy next to me? Because he's got that work ethic. He's different.
He's different. He is.
Yeah. But generally speaking, you look at how the generation, forget about COVID for a second and sidestep that out. You know, you look at that and that's what really changed is the generation gap of how people work.
Yeah. The quality of employee is so much different. than it was 20 years ago. I mean, I'm 35 years old, and this is my 20th year in the industry. And I started in a diner in my little hometown in Ohio doing two.
Did John Mellencamp make a song about you?
No. Wrong town.
Okay.
But like doing 200-300 covers a morning. And I worked with cooks, and we were making, I think my starting wage was $6 an hour as a line cook.
Wow.
And I worked with better cooks then than I find for $20 an hour today.
So when I was 15.
When I was 15 years old.
Realize I'm the oldest one here.
You are. And you look it.
Well, Marvin's here.
you look it.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know.
So I'm 15 years old. And, all right, you know Cooper City.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know where the Beverly Hills Cafe used to be?
Of course, on Sterling Road and
Flamingo.
Yeah.
All right.
You're talking out west, not the original one.
Well, yeah, it's the one in Cooper City.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, not Hollywood.
I'm in Hollywood.
I work there too.
Yeah.
So, but they're in the shopping center, the public shopping center over there. There was an Italian restaurant, and it was called Vincenzo's. Okay. And screw you guys if you ever hear this, but they were deadbeats, boy. I tell you what, like, you know, I was always a rough individual, right? Growing up, like, just that area too, just what it was.
Yeah.
And these guys, I was a 15-year-old, and I was working like a lot. It was basically part time but full time. It was working a lot, and they didn't want to pay. I actually had to go there with my father. They go there to confront, and then, you know, we got paid. But like, these are the kind of like old school dirt bags that you run into. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So, you know,
speaking of, it's not really a dirt bag, but it's one of those things. Did you see that thing in Illinois or Indiana with McDonald's? No. A bunch of 10-year-olds working in a McDonald's.
Working in a McDonald's. I just saw that.
I was like, what?
That's awesome.
Probably awesome, undocumented. Illegal. Probably.
I
didn't read the article. I just was shocked.
That's an assumption.
I didn't read the article either.
Yeah, I was. It was definitely. I jumped the gun. I haven't read it, but I will.
It's an assumption right there.
But I mean, think about that. 10 years old, and how could you? I'm at a loss.
I mean, I was not at 10.
I was 12 when I started. 12,
yeah, 12, 13. I was 12.
We didn't. Well, we're also talking about 40 years ago. There was, you know, and I worked for my parents.
Me
know,
too.
That's what friends I was restaurant.
Right. Well, I wasn't even at the restaurant. I was doing.
Oh no, I was at the restaurant. I hate cleaning calamari shrimp and peppers. I can't stand it to this day. I avoid roasting peppers just because of it.
You know, there's a specific walk-in
right?
smell.
Isn't there?
There's always something. With every chef, there's always something that it strikes that nerve, burns it a little bit.
For the record, I haven't spoken of this Vincenzo's place in decades.
Right.
And I'm going to say no. So their walk-in, I still, like, if I walk into a place and I capture that, I walk out because it was terrible. Like, there's things I recall too, and you don't forget some of these things.
Oh no. What's speaking of stuff that like burns you, what is something like you were like absolutely not going to do it because when I was younger?
Fruit. I hate cutting fruit. Despise it.
Any fruit? Yeah. All fruit?
All fruit. The amount of fruit platters like I've made in my career, the amount of fruit I've cut for
it sucks.
For breakfast,
there is a such thing as portion controlled fruit. You know,
pre-cuts. Yeah, but it's not the same when you get the fresh stuff in there. I understand that too. I mean, I worked at the Bonaventure Hotel and Spa, and they used to have during that certain time of year they would rent out and the entire resort was paid for by a Hasidic group of Jews that would come down for Passover, and they would have the entire hotel. We had three shifts going.
Was this family or was it?
No, thank God. Oh. It was funny. They would come to me and they're like, "Well, you need to work it." And I'm like, "No, I'm Jewish." I pulled the Jewish card. I'm like, "I got to take off." It was they had 10 people. That's all they did was clean fruit. For all the fruit. I'm like, no. Hundreds of cases of melons and cantaloupes and watermelon coming in that they had to strip off and clean. And no, thank you.
It was because of prep is why I never wanted to transition into the kitchen. They tried. So many places. They're like, come on, you know, you're going to. You know.
Pat Utter did that to me in Shenanigans. Yeah. I worked for Pat. I was the only male server.
front of the house. I always loved being in the kitchen. Wanted to open up my restaurant. And Pat looked at me one day and he goes, if I had the opportunity to go to Johnson & Wales when I was going through it, because he was the GM at Martha's back mm-hmm. in the day.
Okay.
And sorry, we're going reminiscing to Hollywood. So he was like, listen, if I had the opportunity, this is where I'd go. And then I transitioned from being the server to being the cook. And then I realized how much money I lost.
Yeah. and how much more hours you have to put
in. It was enormous what I lost.
Right. And how many, and enormous hours.
Yeah. It was backbreaking. It was, and I don't know how I lasted. It was backbreaking, yeah. You know, just to do that, even from moving from the prep cook from when I was 12 to when I was in my 20s going to school. And yeah, just,
I don't know. I mean, at this age, I would never want to step into a restaurant again to work. Like I couldn't do it. I couldn't handle it. Like I'm mad enough to say that I could not.
I don't know if I could handle the Kens and Karens. That's where I think I'd lose my.
That's the hardest part.
Well, that's the that's the problem. You know, you look at me like there's a 30 something year like
gap.
You know, gap. No, I am not putting up with these creatures that, you know, end up making a mockery of culinary, like, you know, the whole experience. No way.
Yeah, and I was, it's funny because you talked to Chef Michael, who you met because we filmed at the Carol. Thanks for letting us do
great
that.
Guy.
You look at that and you have a guy that's trying to go for a Michelin and we had talked in the green room about Rooster and the Till got a nod. And now that you think they're really trying to go for it, that is probably the biggest thing today in today's society of the lack of labor. Is that also, once you do find somebody, they don't really care. All they care about is the paycheck. They don't have that passion.
Right? Oh, it's horrible.
I mean, how do you, that's like when we sit there as chefs, we talk about employment opportunities and getting employees. That's what we're really talking about is the actual
If I showed you some of the, I'm certain that I still have these, but if I showed you some of the communications that I was getting from overseas, that like these cats, and they were showing me their resumes, all the pictures, photography, you know, just of everything they've done. Dude, these there are some talented cats, and they wanted in. Period.
Have either of you guys ever worked with like a J-1 program or anything?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would say my first CDC position in a hotel in Cleveland, Ohio. We brought new J-1 students in every 6 or 8 months, and I tell you what, the work ethic of those kids, and I say kids because they were 16, 17, 18,
7,
years old.
8 years old.
Yeah. Not that young.
Terrible.
But like,
that's my daughter.
Right.
They'd work 12 hours a day and want to work more.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
And that's what we're missing here. You know, and that's the, and there's like, so, Gen Xers, you know, what, you know, all the memes and the videos that are coming out now that they're pretty accurate, you know, like the whole, you know, like I remember, and like in 1983 or four, my, I was probably eight, and I could never think about doing this with my 7-year-old, 8-year-old now. She gives me a shoestring with the house key on it and puts it around my neck. He says, okay, well, this is how you get in. We're not going to be home when you get home. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, yeah, just don't lose it. And, you know, don't let anybody in. I'm like, okay. Yeah, and an 8-year-old kid. I'm like, all right, no problem. And I did it. You know, I came home. I made myself a snack. I did everything I had to do. That's what it was. And you're going to get this soon. Can you imagine?
Nope.
Giving your child a key to the house?
Nope.
Out of here.
Nope. Not my kid. I mean, she's smart enough, intelligent enough, but I still wouldn't do it. I mean, dude, I was at the Hollywood Mall the day that Adam Walsh was abducted. And
that
next day I got home, my mom was like, we're locking the doors, you're not allowed to go. You gotta make sure you do this, da 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 da. Like and our life changed.
That was your hood too.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that was 15 minutes down the road.
Yeah, that definitely changed. That whole event changed how we perceived things back then. And you know, we you know, as I grew up, it became different things too. But right. I mean, good Lord, I mean,
you've heard about them all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ironically enough, the Hollywood Mall was literally across the street from the police department.
Yeah.
And it still is today.
Oh my God.
That was the big irony of the whole thing. Yeah. Sears faced North Park Road and Hollywood Boulevard was towards now, which is Target, I think. It was near that. And that whole area, that's where he was taken out by whoever.
I
gotta tell you,
I never was really crazy about the Hollywood Mall.
Oh,
the fashion center.
Well, no, that's different. Hollywood Mall, the Hollywood Fashion Center is over on 441 and
They renamed
it. Boulevard. Yeah, I don't know what it's called now.
Yeah, no, but the old Hollywood Mall, I was never a fan.
Oh, neither was I, but it was something for me to go over with my friends during the summer because, again, your parents said, we're not taking you to summer camp so you can go do whatever you want at 12.
Right. Well, don't come home.
Right.
Don't come home.
Stay out of the house.
John, the producer over here, actually known John, God, since 1989. So back then, I was 15, he was 16 or 17, whatever, he had a car. But what we also do is go to the Broward Mall, and we would drive in circles. We'd play our music loud, right? Because we had little systems and stuff in the car.
Of course you do.
And just circle the mall because it was a great mall to just drive around and, you know, looking for them honeys and just, you know, and just driving around the mall. And we would go.
And then
from
Friday night, you would go on the strip.
We'd go from the mall,
Elbow Room, the candy store.
You would go from the mall right straight over to
Broward Boulevard,
and then you would drive in circles. But that was when you could actually park on the sand too, if you remember.
Yep,
you park right.
That's when they were just about to change the direction. You can actually go both north and south on Las Olas.
Right, but it was still it would still have to turn at the whatever that street was. But I remember skipping school. 10th, 11th grade, whatever it was. And we would just go to the beach, park right on the sand, man. It was awesome. Kids, there's no kids out there, but don't do any of that. That's really terrible. Bad choices, bad decisions.
But look at you now. You skip school and you have a whole podcast going on. Yeah, a whole media group.
Media empire.
Right. There you go. Yeah. See? But
imagine how
if you actually stayed in school?
How much sooner this all could have come into fruition had I...
Technology had to catch up. That's why.
Yeah, you know, I mean, man ahead of his time. Yeah,
yeah, well, we didn't get the flip phone until like in the 90s, I think it was. Well, we had the bricks in the 80s.
They had the bricks in the 80s, but in 93, the Nokia came out.
Mm-hmm.
That first Nokia, and everybody had it. And we were what, 21?
And then Ericsson came up with the one.
I had the Ericsson.
Yep.
I had that Ericsson.
Then we had Motorola with the Moto, and then we had
the texting.
So when you used to text on the old phone,
BlackBerry was the best thing ever.
Oh,
when that was
that came out. Yeah, that was.
I had just gotten into sales when that came out, and it was just like, holy crap! And you can actually send emails and everything from there. So I'd be at the bar, you know, like doing all the work from, you know, whatever. Again, bad choices. But yeah, no. Anyway, so today, now we have little computers in our pocket, amongst other things, I guess. Right, for you, you got other stuff in your pocket.
Yeah,
I know you do.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, keep it to yourself.
I will. Yeah. It's for Marvin. Right. Well, my daughter, she is so addicted to that phone. It's like, ugh. I don't know if that's what turned her into the Satan spawn, but I don't know.
I mean, I have an excuse because I'm literally always doing something for you know, whether it's restaurant recipes, the Dirty Dash, Walk Talk podcast, constantly on the phone, constantly social media, constantly posting or doing something.
You post more than me.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
And you
I post a lot.
You're a bit of a posting whore.
If I'm a posting whore.
I'm the madam.
Hello, madam.
And I don't post at all.
Sir, madam.
Sometimes you do.
So every once in a while. Carl yells at me all the time. Bro, tells me I need to post more.
You got to step your game up, homie.
I know. Yeah. Here's the thing. And I went kicking and screaming to go to TikTok. And Keith Saracen is the one that's like, dude, you got to get on it because this is like the next big thing. But now the biggest thing now, YouTube Shorts.
So yeah.
It's passed TikTok. Shorts and for chefs, we have to.
No, for sure. Let me tell you something. So what I started doing is taking some episodes that are already that we've already published, and from YouTube Shorts, you can capture what you want, edit it right there, and send it right out. And then it's, I mean, we get pretty good coverage on our YouTube stuff. You know, like right now we have a couple of videos that are about 2 to 3 weeks out, you know, that they've been out for about 3 weeks. And, you know, we're floating around 10, 12,000 views for those videos. But when you put the shorts out, within a few hours, you have 1,500, 2,500 views. Like, it's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's powerful.
I just did one with a mech, like a taco bowl, and it hit 1,000. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was stupid. It was like nothing. I was like,
it's not stupid. Don't say that.
For me, like some of the videos you do, you're like, oh, this might be it. Nope. I don't know what it is and how that algorithm works, but I haven't figured that out. I don't need to. I just keep on posting.
Yeah, I don't get it. I did. I have done some posts. Like I did a video of I make fresh focaccia at the hotel, and like that hit like 2,000 views like within days.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a couple days later, I got some fresh black truffles, and like as a chef, you're thinking, oh,
it didn't. Yeah. I saw that one.
Nothing.
Too. Yeah.
Nothing. No traction at all.
That's what happens. But you don't do it enough. That's the algorithm telling you to take a hike. Okay? They say, take a hike, Mike. That's what they say to you. Yeah. Because the algorithm is like, look at this cat. We're going to tease him, and then we're just going to pull it back. That's what they do. That's what they're doing to you.
So in other words, they're telling me I have to post more.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was kind of pissed because
you have to do it like two times a day when you're first starting, 2 to 3 times a day when you're first starting out until you get your you know, your audience.
I actually have, I'm not happy with this. I have,
He's not.
No, this is from a couple of months ago when I was kind of experimenting with shorts on YouTube, and
thank God he clarified shorts and YouTube. you didn't know where it's going to go when he says experimenting.
It's kind of a patty. So you know, I was getting like 1,300 views, 500, 800, beep, beep, beep. And then I posted a short clip of your walk and talk interviews video. And it hardly registered at all. And I'm looking at it now and I'm pissed. I'm actually going to delete it and redo it. But because after that, it's 1,500, 2,000, 2,500, 1,500, 1,600. This is on the shorts. And they happen like lickety split.
It's probably my daughter watching. Dog.
Hey, whatever, man.
Because she—that's all she watches—is YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, no, we're
ridiculous.
You. First of all, whoever is listening to this, you have to understand. You have to go to the walk in talk on YouTube, and you need to look for Chef Thomas Parker in the playlist. Coming here probably in the next call it a week. Should have something starting to go up there. And you need to start watching Chef Thomas Parker because his food is stupid.
What I love is he says, you need to go. And then he turns to look at John, like John's the one that posts the videos, but he's the key master over here.
Yeah,
he's Zool.
I keep thinking like, why isn't stuff getting done around here? And I start looking around and I'm like, damn it. I haven't gotten to it yet. There's so many things, man. There's so much people. Okay, so if you're a Gen Z, if you still have a teat that you're coddling at night, I'm only kidding. If you're a younger person and you want to get into, you know, something with cameras and social media, don't do it. Don't do it. It's expensive. And it's grueling. It is fun. We have a good time.
Oh, yeah. But this is different.
In all seriousness, it's like you really have to dedicate and commit to this in a big way. And then when like you spend a boatload of money on certain pieces of equipment and then something breaks or it doesn't work.
It's like $700 for a new soundboard.
Yeah, $700 for a new soundboard or, you know.
It's only 6 months old.
Right. Yeah. Like that kind of stuff.
But listen, give a big shout out to Roadcast because they did it right.
Okay, so
you mean when there's a negative, you got to do the positive, be balanced.
Let me explain that real quick. So we have audio mixers and video mixers, all sorts of fancy dancy stuff, right?
The worst that you can think of, the worst thing that could ever happen is during a live taping, your board just takes a poop.
Yeah, like the soundboard, the mixing board, the Roadcaster Pro 2, which is a beautiful piece of equipment. We're actually we're recording. We're on a podcast with a big wig over at the ACF, and we're in the middle of this recording, and then it just went, and I'm just like, what? And I'm like, okay, well, anyway, it was terrible, and it was so unprofessional and horrible, and I was pissed. And I'm like, all right, I'm not sure what the problem is here. So John's like, I'm like, it'll go away. It's going to go away. It'll be fine. John's like, no, man, you should probably go and, you know, call him and whatever. I'm like, nah, fine. I called him. Turns out we went through this whole, you know, breakdown of what it could be. And it was probably the one of the, you know, one of the main boards in there. He says, well, you're still under warranty. So why don't you send that back, and then we'll send you a new one. And I'm like, look, homie, I don't do this for fun. This is like what we do for a living.
By the way, the guy's in Australia. He calls him homie.
And it's a true story. I was like, Mom, come on home. I'm like, you know, we do this for a living. Like, this is not for a hobby, you know? And
yeah, you don't have time to wait for.
I don't have time for that. Like, come on. He goes, I didn't have to say anything further. He was cool as hell. He says, all right, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to ship you now, but I do need you to make sure you send the other unit back. I was like, deal, of course. So they were really good about it. So right now what we're working off of is the new unit, and it's awesome. The problem with the other unit, too, is I couldn't update the firmware with, like, updates, and we were, like 15 updates behind, and it does some really badass stuff now. Really, really cool. So anyway, with that said.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Degrees out, and did you feel that wind?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
This is beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot, this is like being in San Francisco in July.
As a reminder, without stepping in, you know, human feces.
Feces, right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for everybody out there listening, as a reminder, we're at Cahaba Club Herbal Outpost, which is a microgreens farm, microflowers farm. And, you know, Marvin does a terrific job out here. This place is so beautiful.
And then, by the way, that's not wind blowing in the background you hear. That's actually the waterfall in the
lake. I don't think they can hear it.
Oh, there, you can hear it. I can hear like hissing.
It'll come out when we only a, like, don't get so dork nerdy.
Oh, I just, it's because, you know, what's relaxing. I mean, he built his, Jesus, that's a it's a dinosaur. He built this farm to be like chill. Me. You know, it's everything about his farm is
there's
just
like
very
some feng shui.
Back.
I'm gonna say there's some feng shui going on here. You know,
even the barn where he lives, it's just, it's amazing to be out here.
Yeah, and you know what? In the season. You know, the cool months.
Oh yeah,
and you see the product he does, what he puts out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm all.
He had some damage when it got really cold. I remember that the last time we were here. So, it's just one of those things. Does the immigration thing really affect you as much because you can't get certain people, or how does that work for you?
Not really. It's weird because I've been down here 2 years now in Florida, and all you hear about is the ethnic workers. You know, restaurants are full of ethnicities. My kitchen's not.
I noticed that about your kitchen.
The people that walk into my kitchen are not foreign. They're not ethnic. I've been fortunate. I found some really good cooks, really good chefs that are passionate and care about what we do.
One of the things I love about having a very diverse kitchen, my last kitchen I was in with my restaurant, at the one point I had an entirely female staff and it was fantastic. They were, one was Puerto Rican, one was, you know, Afro-American. There was one that was the,
What was that background? Dominican or Cuban. So I, every time we had a family meal, it was something different from that person's. Like, I would always say to my cooks, like, okay, who wants to do family meal? Make sure it's something that's going to warm our soul. And it was really cool to see their passion for their cuisine. And then sometimes their cuisine actually ended up making it onto the menu, which was great, because what better way to kind of introduce people to different things? Like, not many people know what a mofongo is or a trifungo.
What'd you call me?
Exactly.
You know. Well, all right. So what I'm... I'm thinking here is, so this is our new track for talking about the cool products that we, you know, work with, like, for example, 813 Tequila or Peninsula, you know, Peninsula Food Service with the Creekstone Farm, Lena Olive Oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
soon the Bacon Cartel's two sauces.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I know there's a reason why you hang around, right? You know what I'm saying?
Like, I thought this was the food.
No. Not that.
That's what you were.
Yeah, that's right. You're around for the growth. Right. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, we're all working together here. So, yeah, how do you like the sound?
That's awesome.
It is
so
cool.
I want to give a shout out to Pablo. How do I say his last name? Vivas. Yeah. Okay. Pablo Vivas. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, Pablo does a great job.
Pablo is, first of all, as a human being, he's amazing. And all of the music that you hear on the podcast is made by Pablo. Like, he composed it, played it, record, like, did everything. He's a genius. He's a badass. So this is one of them. And
yeah, you got to keep this one.
Yeah. Well, this is for specifically talking about sponsors. Nah. Like, in the middle of a show, we're gonna start doing this. And we have this in the background. And, like, we're talking about, oh, man, you know, Dino and Joseph over at Molina Olive Oil. Those cats. By the way,
he needs that spicy olive oil that Molina has.
I have it.
Wait a minute.
My God. Thomas. I've had it from the beginning.
Thomas, how do you love it?
It's the hands down the best olive oil I've ever tasted.
Right? And what about some of, like, the other ancillaries?
The spicy pepperiness of
the
it.
The organic, like, one you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fenta.
Right.
Fenta.
That's delicious, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he does a great product. I mean, here's the thing. He's taking the Greek olives and he's taking them, shipping them over here, and he's pressing them in St. Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't get better than
that. Then he also just, like, they updated their inventory, too, their product line. So they have all sorts of other products that you are.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, and we also have people that are up and coming that are coming on to the.
So, yeah, we're actually media. We just penned a deal with. My boy, his name is Ryan Spence at Southern Deli and Provisions, and that is awesome. He's got about 3,000 items, and they're all freaking high end and beautiful. Everything from, like, charcuterie to
He does the whole state.
Yeah. If you're listening to me, if you can hear the sound of my voice from wherever you are in the state of Florida, you too can get amazing products from Southern Provisions, Deli and Provisions. Reach out to us at thewalkandtalk.com. Send a note, and I can connect you to awesomeness. That's what we do here on the show, connect to awesomeness.
Well, and I would probably give a shout-out to anybody who wants to come on the show or show us products and be a part of our, either be a culinary partner or a vendor partner.
Oh,
give
so
you
wait,
a call.
Wait a second. I have another.
Notice I just threw it at him.
Wait. Hold on a second. Time out. John, can you transition into the other pad?
Now, here we go. Let's see how this is going to... He's so slick, isn't he?
All right, so do you hear this track?
Yeah.
All right, so this track here is specifically for talking about the Walk and Talk media empire. All of it. And ultimately, this is when we're... Yes.
So wait a minute. Two Star Wars nerds. It's May 4th.
Yeah. I know.
I'm thinking you should have had something more, like, cynical, sinister, like maybe, like, the March of the Empire. Imperial. Right.
Okay, that's... Yes.
I can play it for
the Empire. So can I. It's my ringtone. Actually, my wife walked down instead of Here Comes the Bride. She walked down to the Imperial March.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was the funniest, and we set that up. That's her ringtone.
I had that set up from an ex of mine. But that was another
whole other situation.
Yeah. But so this is the track by Pablo Vivas that it's for talking about the show.
It's kind of Miami-ish. I like it.
I know. Well, you know, it's got a good flow to it. So when we're going to talk about the Restaurant Life magazine, or we're going to talk about restaurant recipes with Chef Thomas Parker, or restaurant recipes with Chef Jonathan Rodriguez or Alex Reyes or, you know, Kevin Ho, the lineup of chefs that we got coming on, it's hot. It's hot. And we're changing. We're going to change the face of culinary because of this.
You know, I have to throw this one out there. Marcos, over in 1961, John told me to go there.
Yeah.
We need to do a nice little podcast. He does a phenomenal job. I have never had a ham croquetta the way he does it. It's more like a dumpling, but it's so airy. And then he does a beautiful sauce underneath.
That's
just
downtown, right?
Yeah, right literally in the heart of Lakeland.
Yeah, it's downtown Lakeland, man. It's a badass place. Yeah,
and it's... Think of Ghostbusters or like one of the movies where it's got the marble front and etched in the marble is 1961. Don't go looking for it because look for it that way. It's not black. It's kind of etched into the marble.
Yeah.
So when you get there, you're like, where the hell is it? That's the building right there. It's right across the way from Harry's Bar, which is a pinnacle place in downtown Lakeland.
Yeah. I mean, you should go check it out, Jeff.
Yeah. The chef is Cuban. He did a bunch of different jobs. All over the country, worked for country clubs and stuff like that, and he opened up this thing to move from where he was.
He's been open for a while now, too.
Yeah, about 18 months.
No, 18 months.
The new one, the new location, has been about 18 months. The build out.
Yeah, because I know that it's been quite a while. Mm-hmm. He opened up before COVID.
Yeah, he's crushing it. The food, the flavor profile, the chicken sandwich I had was just fantastic. The fried calamari, because Bacon Bits loves that. It was fantastic. The whole meal in itself was just fantastic. Great experience. You know, he didn't even know who I was, and we started talking. He saw the tattoos.
By now, people should know who you are.
You know, that happened. Did I tell you that?
No.
So I'm down at the farm in Sebring, and this couple's talking to me, and you know, they're saying my name. My nickname's Sheffrey. And then when we get done, she then reveals like, oh, I'm a chef. I want to open up food truck and so on and so forth. And she goes, by the way, we follow you on social media. She goes, we knew who you were.
That's cool.
And I was like, oh, okay. She goes, we wanted to find out if you're really the big deal that, you know, you are on social media. And I'm like, and? She's like, yeah, the food was awesome. I'm like, cool. But it's just like when Jay Garner, when we were setting up and he goes, oh, I know that voice. I kind of got freaked out. So it was like another thing of like, no, I'm not that dude. I'm nowhere near that dude.
Funny story. This was a couple of years ago.
You're the one with
Roberto Treviño. Chef Roberto Treviño is he was a Food Network chef, like badass. He's still a badass. He's a good friend. He's a good dude. He was at a restaurant in Orlando, and he was kind of the face of the restaurant, and we were doing a show there. So it's kind of like a long restaurant, like a shotgun, kind of restaurant. And everything had to get walked across the whole place. We're setting up. We're doing our thing, whatever. You know, they're open. You know, they're open for business. We're setting up. I walk past the table and I hear Carl. And I turn around and I'm like, I'm looking and I'm like, I have no idea who these people are. And I'm like, yes. And they go, we follow you. We follow your show. The Walk and Talk show. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, who put you up to the, like, where's Ashton Kutcher?
Yeah, right.
Am I being punked?
Where's Alan Funt? You know what I mean? Like, what are you kidding me? And they were like, he's like, no. And he pulled up the thing and he showed me. I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever. So I had Willie. I said, Willie, do me a favor. Go interview that guy. And just, you know, and we put him on the.
That's awesome.
Thing. Yeah, it was so cool. Because, you know, what are the odds? Family Guy was his fella, his wife, couple of kids.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Family Guy. Seth MacFarlane?
I wish. yeah, sure. Why not?
Oh, Shapoopy.
I watch your show. It's real good. Yeah, I love it. So that's cool. All right. So, Chef, are you excited about the freaking videos coming out or what?
No. Absolutely, man.
All right.
Like, right. As a chef, our day-to-day operation is so stressful, monotonous at times. Like, having you guys in and taking a day away to do that can be such the most enjoyable thing of my month that I do.
So, all right, I'm going to say something, right? So coming from you know, obviously I had the restaurant experience, right? But then I got out of it, and I went into the distribution and sales.
The dark side.
Right. Yeah. I went there. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Right. For you guys. So I went into that. So I'm dealing with, you know, like literally over the thousands of chefs over my career. And chefs can be kind of assholes. But
not kind of.
Overall. Like,
we are.
We definitely are.
No, listen. Overall, you know, rough exterior, inside is like dough. You know what I mean? It's like butter in there. But I do know that everybody, and now that I'm part of like doing this the media thing, everybody wants to get like an attaboy. Like, hey, man, you're doing a great job. You know what I mean? Because it feels, it's nice to be recognized.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you got to think for his staff and for him
I'm
having
saying,
those.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Like, the fact is, the guy cooks. The guy, boy, can cook.
Right. He can throw it down.
He can throw down. So that to me, I'm like, put him up here. I want, and that's the nature of the show, is that like, hey, you might be known in the trade and people know, but let's get everyone to know, as many people to know you as possible, and let's put together our little network of chefs and let's like do some damage. So the fact is, we get to go in there, kind of cradle you like this and go, you're doing a great job, baby. You know what I mean? and we put you on film, man, and we get to showcase what you do. How you got two chefs here? Isn't this cool or not cool?
No, it's awesome.
Oh, it's epic.
I mean, me being from the East Coast of Florida, moving to the West Coast, I had no culinary, you know, chomps here in town, obviously. I mean, back there, I did, well, somewhat of one. But here, you know, the show introduced me to, like, Jonathan and Thomas and Kevin and, my God, all these. And we did that one down in St. Pete.
Marvin.
Well, yeah, the farmers, too. You know, let's not forget about Happy Trails. We need to talk about them towards the end of the show. That's the one that just called me and said, hey, I'm losing my farm.
Oh, okay. Days. I didn't catch the name.
Yeah, yes. Happy Trails. It's okay. A goat farmer. So we'll you know, just meeting everybody and having that, and then seeing these guys in their domain. Even Amanda, that was great when we did her show.
Oh, sure.
At her studio, that was fantastic. Because here's the thing, I'm getting to see what other chefs are being. They're reinventing themselves. So Amanda has a I don't remember what her. I was sorry for Amanda. I don't remember the name of the business, but it's. Chef's Table, right. Thank you, John. So she owns this thing called Chef's Table, and during QVC and the whole hype of the COVID, she shifted gears and started doing that and bought a little studio, and she has chefs come in there and does all the products right there.
But what's the chef, the chef, what's his name?
Which one?
The Food Network chef. No,
oh,
the
Zakaria. Network. Jeffrey Zakaria.
Yeah, yeah.
Zakaria,
yeah.
I went to the bathroom and washed my hands, and I see his coat. Wow, he's
did you put it on?
No, like it was gonna be like Tommy Boy, fat guy in a little coat. That I couldn't get that thing around my forearm.
You tried.
I mean, yeah, I tried. I seriously tried. I was like, good Lord. I mean, that's like a small.
Oh yeah.
And I made a comment, I think, to Amanda too, and I'm like, seriously? She's like, yeah, he's lost a lot of weight. I mean, great for him, but
bad
wow.
For you.
Well, I'm on the way down. I'm down to 231 from 250.
Not bad.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm, so, I'm what am I 208 today?
Well, after that pork, probably like 212.
I'm 212. I'll be 215 by tomorrow. Once it's settled, right?
Right.
Those pounds of pork belly in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Because Carl keeps on saying this. This is where we want to do like the walk and talk kind of like throwdown here with a bunch of the chefs. Yeah.
Oh,
this is where we want to do it. And it'd be great like in October, November, because it's like the humidity kind of.
I was talking. So I keep talking about this Mark Conway. Right?
Then we
met at NAFM.
That's the one with the pink suit.
Yes.
We say Mark, and then he has to go, pink suit. I'm like, yes, gotcha.
Right. Because he's cool as hell. And he, you know, he was a chef prior, and now he hosts, you know, the World Food Championships and Cooking Championships, whatever. And he does a lot of cool stuff. And he we're in sort of the same space. And, you know, when you get two cool, you know, media operations and you put them together, you can do a lot of stuff. So that's the idea. Anyway, he's got something.
He just told me this yesterday.
I'm not going to break it either because it's not done. But he's got some big thing that's going to be coming up next year.
It's marinating.
It's marinating. We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about
on air.
It
we're not going to talk about it.
No,
on
we're
air.
Not going to talk about it yet. But I will tell you that I threw Jeffrey's hat in the ring for this event, and it's going to be a huge freaking event. And you, sir.
I got a lot of barbecue to make.
You got a lot of barbecue to make. Anyway, so look, all I want you to do Thomas, is start sharing stuff on social media. Okay? Like, that's your freaking, that's your job.
That's your homework.
Yeah. Or if you can, you know, maybe you can talk your, you know, talk wifey into doing it for you. I don't know.
That'd be great. She yells at me too.
Yeah.
About that.
Put her in charge.
You need to post your stuff more.
Put her in charge. You're going to have a, listen, let me tell you something right now. You're going to have a crap load of content. Okay? And you need to be pushing it everywhere.
Yeah.
In order to maximize this, that's what we got to do. So you have to do that. Put your wife in charge.
You know the guy who does all the chocolate, Andre? He's like 22 million.
Mm-hmm.
His wife is the social media person.
Really?
Yeah. So forget about even all that, the monetization of what he has on his account. Oh, my Lord. I guarantee he doesn't have to pay for chocolate ever again if he wanted to. Because of the way the sponsorships.
Right.
So think about how you can monetize as you're doing this.
And by the way,
it's huge.
813 Tequila is in the house. I'm just saying.
I'm looking for the bottles is what I'm looking for.
Where are the bottles at?
Yeah, where's the tequila?
Where is this?
Tomorrow, Cinco de Mayo. I mean, Revenge of the Sith.
And then Chef Sean just walked in as well. We got a lot of stuff going on. You're going to hang for a bit, right?
Oh, I'll be here.
Oh, he wants to walk around. Are you kidding me? He hasn't even seen that.
I haven't seen the other side of the farm.
We got to do the tour and everything. John.
And there's Marvelous Marvin's daughter just coming and say hello.
All right. So, first of all, let me thank everybody. Chef Thomas for being here. Jeffrey, John, the whole crew. True story. Chef Sean is in. He just took a nice position over at one of Chef Chris Pond's places. Got Daryl in the house from 813 Tequila, and we're going to get into some cool stuff coming up here next. And I just want to thank you for listening. Share the show, people. Share the damn show. Let's make it happen.
We don't mind if you share.
I'm not a
sharing's caring.
Yeah, not a caring either. It's just caring.
Yeah, caring.
Yeah, caring. Not with the short haircut.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Okay.
No. Right. Not Princess Leia.
No, we we are out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.